Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hey friends, it's Ken Carmen.
And Anthony Lima.
Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Your way and on your time.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Nick and JP back on Afternoon Drive. We've got Pete Futek coming up at 4:20 today. We got the quarterback Deadpool coming up in 40 minutes. Mac has been making hay in the quarterback Deadpool. The rest of us, we're just getting by.
We had a college football savant among us.
We do. Who knew? The guy who couldn't find a third quarterback in the draft. He's gone from hacksaw in the quarterback Deadpool to not being hacksaw, and we appreciate him on that one, but the Cavs are back, and they lost, so why do they suck?
I
mean, that's the conversation we got to have.
Yeah, let's have all the answers after one game. Let's try to figure it out. It was obviously not a pretty game. I don't know that I care as much as some other people that Donovan Mitchell, scored a 21-point third quarter and decided to get them back in the game and look at that as a bad thing. To me, that was like, okay, you did what you had. You put the cape on. You put him back in a position. You erased the big deficit and had him leading. And then you got it down to the fourth, and it was what it was.
I just think the funniest thing about, to me, it looked like the quintessential feel-out game. Two teams that didn't look all that ready for the regular season. I know New York made more shots, but It looked like how I think when you have four preseason games and the Cavs hadn't played in over a week's time, that's how that first game should look, right? We're subsiding on good feels and basketball's back, not pounding the pavement and pounding the hard court and saying, how is this happening? Why is this happening? Like, the two most interesting things from last night tangentially happened on the court. They did not happen during actual play. The first one was after the game, Donovan Mitchell dapping every single New York Knick up. Except for Josh Hart.
Yeah.
Which is only going to aid the idea that people think the two of them hate each other, which is funny because I thought they were teammates in Utah, but I don't know if they actually linked up.
He was also teammates with Rudy Gobert in Utah, and we know they hated each other. So
the old microphone toucher.
If anything, being teammates with Donovan, unless you're Joe Ingles. For some reason, that Utah team, it just didn't work for him with making a lot of friends.
Could it be that it was in Utah?
Well, I think Rudy Gobert is just he just kind of stinks.
Yeah. That's fair. I think Utah's beautiful, by the way, but I get it if you're an NBA player and you don't feel comfortable there.
Have you been to Utah?
Josh Hart never played in Utah.
What did you say?
Josh Hart never played in Utah.
Well, neither did you.
Not with that attitude,
Are you sure he didn't play in Utah?
I'm looking at his senior basketball research. Reference page.
He played in New Orleans. He played in Portland. He played in L.A. That's okay.
You don't need to guess his basketball reference page right now.
I wanted to let everyone know I do know Josh Hart has played in certain NBA cities.
Have you been to Utah?
Yes. Kind of. So, I have not been to Salt Lake City.
Okay.
But I got to tell you, I've seen pictures of it, and I'd really like to go.
I went when Wichita State, when they were in the opening round of the March Madness tournament, I went, and that was quite a boring city.
So I've been to Tahoe, and I've been to one of the other
small towns. But I'm not a skier, though. I'm not a skier. Like, if I love skiing or something like that, then I'm sure I would have had a great time in Salt Lake City.
I just think it looks beautiful. I just think and you don't have, like, the earthquake concern that other mountainous areas have.
Yeah, that's always a problem.
That's some pretty strong Utah analysis there. I'm going to bail out of that.
The Josh Hart situation, that was the one, and I'm assuming the other one you're going to highlight here is Jared Allen and what he said before the game.
Yes, and we're going to play Jared Allen's comments as heard The attempt at a joke here by ESPN.
Is it just me? Or the lights in here brighter than expected?
So that harkens back to 3 years ago getting bounced out of the series by the Knicks and Jared Allen saying, I guess the lights were brighter than we expected. In fairness, he has come to say he kind of said that tongue-in-cheek when he said that originally. But it doesn't matter. People were pissed that he said this yesterday.
People were pissed. I understand why people were pissed. I think the problem that me and you are going to have in this discussion, I don't want to speak for you, I don't know where you stand on it, is more the idea that we have an appreciation for comedy that we can't let go of in this situation.
Yeah, it's a funny bit.
It's a funny bit.
It's a really funny bit.
I get why it made people mad. I understand why it made people mad. But for me...
Not last night, I don't understand.
Well, but for me, it was more about him trying to continue the idea that, first off, they're putting those demons in the closet and they're tucking them away, and they can laugh at the problems that they used to have because they're not worried about those problems anymore. He's not concerned about whether the lights are too bright. He's been in bigger moments. He's gotten over that. And if anything, when you can joke about something like that, that's kind of shown that you have.
So... I look at it and go, like 3 years ago, I got why you were upset. That made a lot of sense. It really does. I mean, him saying that, even tongue-in-cheek, 3 years ago, because of the way that postseason loss to the Knicks stung, you were the favorites, you were the better team, and you lost in five games. Get it. Now, I mean, the guy had a bad game last night. There's no, I mean, what, 4 points, four rebounds? Yep, he did not have his best game.
Which every now and then Jared has one of those
but
games.
We don't need to do the march on Washington for Jared Allen if he has a bad game. It's not Jared Allen's fault. He's not a superstar level player. The same level as like a Donovan Mitchell, Evan Mobley, or Darius Garland. He's a really damn good basketball player. He had a bad night. And he hearkened back to a joke that he made 3 years ago. I mean, some of the takes I heard on Jared Allen today, as if he can't make that joke. It's like the guy is part of your resurgence, and he's an incredibly valuable basketball player.
And on most nights, he's a walking double-double.
Yes, and by the way, has been an all-star, could be an all-star again in a weakened East this year. Like, I it's weird when we kind of develop these, and I get it, right? I do, because... They're like Miles. Like Miles will say something like he did last Friday, and I'll be like, dude, you don't get to say that. So everybody has their soft spot with individual players. Mm-hmm. I don't get why it's Jared Allen. Jared Allen's not the reason you've been bounced out of the playoffs prematurely the last 3 years, because he's more of a role-playing starter than he is a superstar. The failure's on your superstar players.
Yeah, no question. All right, so what did you make inside the game where Mobley starts off incredibly hot? Mobley's aggressive. Mobley's taking three-pointers. And then it felt like Mobley did what we've seen Mobley do before. And we saw him do it, honestly, in the second round of the postseason last year, where he'd have these really nice halves. And this is just the first quarter. And then the second half just be a completely different player.
Is this a cop-out if I say... That's like 99% of the NBA. I don't watch most NBA players dominate from the first minute to the 48th minute. That's not really how the game goes. It is a game of runs, and certainly superstar players, oh, you got your 12 points here. You got your 12 points here. Like Donovan.
Yeah, that's the sad part about the NBA. Most players are just trying to get to their number, and then they just kind of stop.
Well, but I don't even think it's like...
But I don't think that was it.
I don't think it's like a cynical thing. I just think... Okay, they had a response to him being dominating, and I don't think the offense is going to be incredibly functional or interesting if it's just Evan commanding the offense for four quarters. I think it's about when he commands. Now, that's the interesting thing. Like, okay, Evan, you were dominant early, and then you really weren't in the second half. Where was that? That's a fair conversation. But to the big thing of, like, are we going to be tracking when his big runs come all season long? Because... That sounds exhausting to me.
No, I think what was startling for fans, or what was at least exciting for fans, is, I mean, he shot 8 3-pointers in that game, and you're like, whoa, that's like you want it. Like, if Evan Mobley is going to be better than Donovan by the time we get to the playoffs and make that ascension into being the best player on this team, how it's going to happen is from, I mean, maybe not 8 3-pointers every night, but elevating that 3-point shot and taking the chances on the outside. And so to see that growth early on, like I was very encouraged by that. I thought that was a very good sign.
I do think it is, but I think it's something that's going to be a work in progress. And I like, listen, we're going to need to see a couple games where he does that late in the game. And I really actually did understand Ken's point this morning that Donovan taking over the way he does is not always the best possible scenario, because you're your best when any one of your three best players can do that. That's not about Donovan laying out, though. That's about Evan saying, it's my run, I'm feeling it, I need to take over because we've got the matchup that I'm going to be the best version of that. So I don't think that's a Donovan thing. Like, Donovan, like, if you want Evan to take over in that same moment that Donovan did last night, it's on Evan to throw up the stop sign. And that's a relationship between two players. And I, by the way, I happen to think that if Evan told Donovan that last night, I think Donovan would have gone away because he's done it for Darius too at different points.
Well, so I think the problem that I think Cavs fans had within that is that they're living with what happened in the second round of the postseason last year, and they're living within game three and game four, where you watch this exact scenario play out in many ways, where you want to say it's Evan putting up the stop sign, call it whatever you want, but it felt like Donovan needed to put the world on his shoulders and then took it upon himself to do so. I just don't think a Donovan Mitchell takeover game is ever a bad thing. I just don't look at it that
way. Yeah, I think that's like, listen, over 82 games, I'm going to need Evan to take 5 to 10 games over like that. I'm going to need Donovan to take, and I'm just throwing out a random number. I'm just trying to like give you the sample size. Donovan's still probably going to take over more than Evan, mm-hmm. and probably going to take more over than Darius. That's okay. Donovan's more used to that. So as much, though, as there are going to be times where Donovan has to fall back, that's on Evan to make it happen. And the only thing that Donovan, Darius, and Kenny Atkinson can do in that scenario is encourage Evan. But ultimately, if he's not feeling it or if he's got a side character syndrome, well, that's kind of on the kid. That's not a criticism. That's just the reality of it. I thought the Donovan, I understand the point, but I thought the Donovan criticism was way off base because yeah. I was like,
no, I did too.
No, well, somebody's got to do it.
Exactly.
Donovan can't look at Evan and go, you like point at him like you can't initiate that for somebody else,
especially not when you're down 17 like the Cavs were at one point in that game. I mean, that was a obviously they clawed back into it, and because of Donovan, you ended up having the lead near the end of the third. But that was for many stretches of that game. That was the Knicks dominating.
I watch the reaction to the game. And I think some of it is, I think actually it's a really good thing because I think people are just excited that basketball's back.
Yeah, I like that people cared about it. I got worried that a game like that would happen and people would just sweep it under the rug and not really do anything with it anyway. Like, I was almost encouraged at the outrage that I saw because it tells me that we're going to have a lot of really cool conversations throughout the regular season.
Yeah, that same thing.
People took it too far, though. Hold on. Some people took it too far.
Okay.
Like, when I looked in the Odyssey chaptering today for Baskin and Phelps, and I clicked in the segment and I didn't get to the part where they actually talked about it because they were talking about phone lines being down or some nonsense. Mm-hmm. But the headline on the title was, should the Cavs trade Darius Garland this offseason? Now that I think might be a little bit of a different reaction than what I want to go for after game one. That like that one might be a little bit too, let's not do that after every single game, maybe.
All right, so maybe this is the way, if you had played Chicago last night and you had just blown the doors off and beat them by 30 points, and then tonight you played that same game against the Knicks and lost, I guarantee you the reaction tomorrow would not be what it's been today to last night's Knicks game. And I think that's where I found myself chuckling a little bit of like, yeah, that's why you got to trade Jared. I'm like, easy, damn, does it. Like,
no, they traded Darius. They were ready to go. But you only get so many of these games against what's supposed to be the creme de la creme, the cream of the crop in the East. And that's kind of what I think a lot of people put a lot of weight into this because it's the Knicks and they're the team that is perceived to be the one that could kind of snipe off the East and really ruin a lot of the Cavs' expectations. But it's game one, guys.
Was Jared Allen's joke about the lights being brighter than expected last night, was that a bad look by Jared Allen? And if so, what's going on with you, man? Like, talk to me. All right? We're here to help. Trust Tree with a Nest. It's okay. This is a safe place. And the Patriots' unseen advantage on Sunday, it's right under your nose. It was right under their nose. That's coming up in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey, friends, it's Ken Carmen
and Anthony Lima.
Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Your way and on your time.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. That seemed, I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
It seems like the Patriots have a fair amount of advantages in this game. They've got Drake May. Okay. He's better than Dylan Gabriel. Fair to say.
Just a little bit.
Okay. Just a little bit better. Same class though. Same tier. They've got
you need a new tier system again.
We've got to get new tiers for fears.
Is your quarterback tier system, if it's Drake May and Dylan Gabriel in the same tier, is it just like quarterback, I don't know, 9 all the way to every quarterback in play?
Potentially.
I think
it's a big tier.
Drake May legitimately is hitting top 10 quarterback status right before our very eyes.
I struggle because it reminds me of like Justin Herbert. Like watching him play, he's just such an effortless passer that I'm like, well, we've been crowning Justin Herbert for a really long time, and he's a really damn good quarterback, but he still hasn't gotten that extra step.
Well, we were crowning Justin Herbert off of a lot of things outside of production, and that was the problem. And
Come on, that's a head of lettuce right there.
He does. Well, remember when he entered the league, too, when he like shaved it, and it was just so awkward, and so he looked along like in a Fast and the Furious movie. It wasn't good. But May has been, he is third in yards per attempt, and has been the best deep ball thrower in football this year. 14 of 18, 414 yards, 5 touchdowns on passes 20-plus yards down the field. Like, he has been the opposite of a checkdown Charlie while having every stat imaginable. I told you I talked to my buddy Brian Barrett earlier today, and I was trying to pick his brain. I'm like, so, yeah, because I knew we were talking about Vrabel at some point today, and it's going to come up a lot over the next couple days. I was like, so is it Vrabel? Is it McDaniels? Like, where's the credit going for what's currently happening? He's like, no, it's just Drake May. Mm-hmm. Like, the answer is Drake May. And all of these questions, the answer is Drake May. He's been that awesome.
Now, in fairness, he's played against the Raiders defense, the Dolphins defense, I believe the Jets defense. But
he himself will tell you that's why the Browns is the toughest challenge so far, because the defense has not been good.
But you've got Drake May. Significant advantage. You've got your strongest part of your offense against the second best run defense in football. That's a strong advantage because they can beat you that way. They can stop you from running, especially if you're Kevin Stefanski. They've got Mike Vrabel is perceived, unless you ask Ross Tucker, as the better head coach over Kevin Stefanski, but turns out, and I think there's a great point by Mary Kay Cabot when she was on with the morning show, she talked about kind of this unseen advantage with Mike Vrabel over the Browns.
I think it's going to be tough. It's going to be really tough because Mike knows the inner workings of this football team in almost every area, really. He helped out with special teams. He helped Bubba a ton. Then he started working with the tight ends, and that was really his first responsibility in season, is to coach up those tight ends. And I watched that every single day. I mean, he gave those guys a defensive look. He would put a chest pad on and get physical with those tight ends every single day in practice and really kind of teach them how to block. And so he had a huge impact on David Njoku. Then he moved over to the offensive line, so he knows all about the blocking schemes. He knows the personnel. He knows the culture of this team. He knows the playbook. He was involved in helping to scout Mike Hall and other rookies last year. So it's not going to be easy at all.
So I think it's a really great point. We haven't really addressed it yet. Now, once I started thinking about it, the toughest thing for me is, okay, but how much of an advantage is Mike Vrabel's inside knowledge of Kevin Stefanski and how he likes to do things?
I mean, if you think it's an actual big advantage, this would be the argument against bringing people like Vrabel into your building.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you think about it. If you know that they're going to be a head coach somewhere else and then you might even play them the next year, I would say Vrabel offered up enough positives to outweigh that. But like, this is an important game for the Browns. If Vrabel's got that big of an advantage because of that, then it's the type of thing that limits coaches from doing that type of stuff.
Well, what's funny is we don't necessarily do this with, like, when Josh McDaniel would go up against Bill Belichick, right? Oh, well, he knows Bill Belichick. It's like, yeah, and Bill Belichick knows him. Like, I do think there's a point of, like, I think Kevin Stefanski probably got, and I think the coaching staff in general probably also got a pretty interesting way insight into the way Mike Vrabel thinks, on top of him being a head coach previously for 6 years in the NFL.
No, that's a good point. I don't look at it as some sort of major advantage, though, for the Patriots from that perspective. I think the advantage that they have is just a strike May and Vrabel. Yeah, like, I just don't think they even have to worry about that, really. I hate to put it that way, but it's just kind of true. They're just... And they're not a perfect team, by the way. They're far from a perfect team.
Yeah, I don't think they're 4-2 good. I just think they've played a bunch of really crappy teams.
The hard part, and the part that makes me angry for this weekend, is that, like, where their weaknesses are is exactly the spot that we have not been able to attack teams.
Yeah.
It stinks. And I don't know how much of that, we'll talk about this later on, I don't know how much of that Stefanski's going to play into or shoot himself in the foot with. I don't know. But you can get after this team in certain ways.
I just think when we get to, like, the big potential advantages in this game, right? I think they've got the best trump card you can have, which is Drake May. Because if you have the best quarterback by a wide margin, that's a significant advantage. I think they probably have the next best advantage, because your strongest point on offense, the only thing you do really well, is the thing that they do at an elite level as well in the run defense. And then I think we get to the Browns pass rush. And the reason why I have the Browns pass rush third here is because their defense is their offensive line is built on an incredible amount of physicality. And I think, and I don't think the Browns have a finesse defensive line. That's not what I'm trying to say is, but one of the types of offensive lines that really have success against a wide nine where your guys are spread out more is just a physical ass-kicking offensive line with five, I don't want to say five studs, but like Will Campbell is really, really stinking good, and the attitude permeates from that. So maybe the Vrabel familiarity part begins at like the fourth advantage, right?
Yeah, well, the hope is that Drake May has just never seen a Myles Garrett before. Like that's got to be the hope that the Browns have, is that you're just so defensively in his face, and you throw him off his game, and that ultimately he was getting way too much credit based off of what happened against teams that aren't particularly good defensively.
I actually think the hope is,
but then can we put up enough points to offset that anyway?
I think maybe the hope is that McDaniel and Vrabel, who come from the Belichick tree of just take away what the opponent does best. Well, you can already do that with the run defense. I think when it comes to the pass rush, I think teams have taken away the pass rush to some degree by just getting the ball out quickly. Now, the problem is for Drake May, as you've talked about with his ability to make plays down the field, that might mitigate some of the big plays. So, like, it wouldn't surprise me if McDaniel just said, well, bleep it, we trust our offensive line, but we're just going to get the ball out quickly to mitigate Myles Garrett.
Yeah, I mean, May's secret weapon right now, what he is, his shot diet, if you're using NBA parlance, is throwing the ball deep and doing it at an extremely high level. And his receivers are 21 of 30 in contested targets.
None
which
of
is
them
insane.
Are great, by the way. That's
Stephon Diggs is having like a resurgence year. But like, I know it's funny to say, but he is.
He is, but it's like, if that's your best receiver in 2025,
I get it, but they are making plays for him. Again, you're winning 21 out of 30 contested catches. Like, you're making plays for him, but he's just throwing it up, and he's wildly accurate. Leads the NFL in completion percentage right now. Like, I've been very impressed with what I've seen from him so far.
216-474-0092. Do the Patriots have an added advantage because of Vrabel? I don't think it's okay. Maybe the fourth advantage that we can talk about in this game is just, I think Vrabel is a better head coach than Stefanski.
Yeah, which is kind of wild. I am wondering if like Ross was like huffing paint or something yesterday. I don't know where he got that from.
He really believes in Kevin Stefanski. He is of the subset of media that really buys into what Kevin sells and thinks, and buys into the defenses of Kevin, that none of what's happened in the 6 years here is any of Kevin's fault.
And we just have so much evidence with Vrabel now, though. Like, it's not, you know what I mean? Like, can't you just take the actual concrete evidence? And I don't want to harsh on our guy Ross there. It's just...
I love the ice cream man the way you do. I was as befuddled as you were.
It's just a wild move, the ice cream man.
I think
he's still shocked. He's like, how did you know? It's like, well, geez, shocker. You have a fast food story, Ross. Yeah. I'm so surprised.
Yeah. And no, there's a fast food story where the ice cream machine isn't working. Yeah, every single human being in America has somebody. It's like, you'll never believe this. I have a story about playing Little League. You too?
Wait, you played Little League baseball?
You and 200 million other people. Now, there's another way to frame this game. I thought it was interesting. We're not going to play the audio because it's a small part, but what I'm most interested in. But it also came from Mary Kay's interview with the Morning Boys, where she described the Dolphins game as the get-right game.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, you kicked the crap out of the Dolphins. You had a commanding 31-6 win. I get that that is the kind of game that can make you forget about a lot of your troubles. I thought what was interesting is if we take it one step further and say, okay, if the Dolphins game is the get-right game, what does that make the Patriots game?
The get-lucky game.
Ooh.
You need to get lucky.
Hey, we all get lucky.
Yeah.
Enjoy the bulge.
And going back to Belichick's stomping grounds where everybody got lucky. We didn't care about the age difference either, guys. We just kind of let that be.
We care about the age difference. That's weird.
You need to have some things go right in a way that last week's game did in many ways. But last week you just out-talented them. In this game, you have to Drake May not be Drake May. You're going to have situations where Dylan Gabriel, this has to be the best Dylan Gabriel game we've seen yet. And that's not even a question. And for a 28th ranked defense DVOA wise in the Patriots, like if Dylan doesn't look good in this game, throw in the towel. He's never going to look good. Like, this is the pass defense you're supposed to look good against. It has to be a game where Dylan actually shows you something.
I just kind of think it's the divining rod game. Like, I take out the record here. I think New England has a lot of things that they can beat the crap out of you on. I also think you can beat New England. I think it does start with what's the best way to beat a quarterback. It's get to him quickly, which is the thing the wide nine does. So even if that just forces the Patriots to get the ball out quickly, I'll take Drake May trying to complete 5 to 10 yard slant passes than a bunch of over the top passes, which are then going to put stress on your defense and you're going to fall apart. But I look at it as a divining rod game. Like, I think the Patriots are a nice young team with a lot of promise. I think they're incredibly well coached. I also think they're way more beatable than their record suggests. And so, if last week was the get right game, then this should be a game that you can keep incredibly competitive. And if you do, then you should have a chance to win this game.
Vegas have the 7-point line wrong? Because I've struggled with this one all week long.
I've gone back and forth of like, who are they trying to tempt here? Like, who are they baiting into tagging?
I think they're confused on this game. And, like, I hate giving predictions on games at the end of the day. I really do. This is a really hard game to just cap and just straight up say, I know with certainty it's going to go down one way or another.
So when I say
it's a really hard game.
When I say divining rod, what I mean is if you win, okay, we've got two games you can stack back to back. Like, all right, you're heading in the right direction. 3-5 is a good place to start 8 games into the season, especially when you've won 2 straight. If you lose, but it's competitive, that's not the worst thing in the world. It's going to suck because losing in the NFL sucks, but let's not panic about the damn thing. But if you get blown out, that is an answer. It's not the answer we want, but like if you follow up the Miami blowout by getting blown out against a good, but I don't think truly great team, I think you're going to see that in the end, the Miami game wasn't a get-right game. It was just a fluky kind of act of convergence that happened.
Yeah, blowout's not on my bingo card. I don't see it in this game.
As a Drake May, I can see it.
I just don't.
If they score first and they score quick, and then Kevin does what Kevin does, which is their game script, got to go away from the run. If Kevin abandons the run in this game completely, and you start going to short passing, which is only going to shorten up the field even more because they're just going to know anything you do is going to be short.
I think he's going to pass a lot more than people are comfortable with.
No, I think that's fair, but there's a difference between passing more than you're comfortable with and completely abandoning the run game, which is what he did against Pittsburgh.
I think he's scared of the Patriots' run defense, and I think he's shown us this in previous weeks, that he plays towards other teams' matchups and what they do right and what they do poorly. Like, he plays the matchups an absolute ton and has a ton this season, and so I think it's going to make a lot of people mad that Quinshon will not get the amount of carries that people want him to get.
I think you're right, and that this avenue you're talking about, it doesn't guarantee a blowout. But it is the way that this goes into a blowout very quickly if you just go out and say, all right, Dylan, we're going to go ahead and throw a bunch of, because we've teetered on turnover with Dylan. If he starts to get that itch and he starts forcing things, it could get ugly quickly. And that's what you have to avoid. You have to avoid this getting ugly. You have to make sure to give these guys the confidence to stay in there by running a game plan that says, here's what we do, here's who we are, now we're going to go do it.
Yeah, maybe I need to give more credit. I've been talking up Drake May a ton in my head, so maybe I should just put it out there, the idea that I do think he is developing into a really special quarterback, and it does scare me, but he's never faced this type of defense. And I think I'm holding on to the amount of turnovers that the Browns defense forced last week and hoping that continues.
216-474-0092. If the Dolphins game is the get-right game, what is the Patriots game? For the Cleveland Browns, the QB Deadpool in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey friends, it's Ken Carmen
and Anthony Lima.
Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Your way and on your time.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcast.
Nick and JP back on Afternoon Drive. We'll get to the quarterback Deadpool with the commissioner in just a moment here. Got my my shipment of Hall of Fame beef. I don't know why I said that weird. So we got a picanha.
Yeah. Didn't you order like multiple picanha?
I got one picanha, and we might be getting a couple for Friendsgiving this year.
Did Joe throw in some extras as like a hey?
Nope. Nope. Well, because remember, he brought us out the apple cheddar cinnamon, the sticks that we got that I ended up ordering.
I know, but like so, Ken did get like ground beef, some you know, as Ken calls them, Wagyu.
I mean, I think he and Ken go back for a while there. So, you know, Joe and I are buddies, but, you know, I don't get jealous about that kind of stuff.
Well, not jealous. I just didn't know if he threw a little bit extra into the order. Although Joe probably doesn't do anything with the packaging and the ordering, I would imagine, right?
No, he did see it, though, and he thanked me, which I like. But
that's all you need.
But the truth is, we're going to test out how much my wife and children like picanha. Because if they do, like my buddy Jeremy's so good at making brisket.
Yeah.
It's a little daunting to make a brisket for Friendsgiving. Because I'm like, if it's even 90%. Of his brisket, I'll know it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas picanha, really nobody but the cabin boys and Jeremy's wife, Becky, has had it. So my kids haven't had it. Dan's kids haven't had it. So I would. It's less chance that they're going to be like, Nick's food.
I just think it's fun to present it as like, if this is Joe Thomas's beef. You know, like
that is definitely how we're doing.
That's what I think is cool about it. I think that's why it always sells out right away, is because I think people like that as well. Like, you're eating Joe Thomas's beef.
I'm definitely getting in trouble for me. Like, how does Joe Thomas's meat taste, everybody?
Is his end goal to turn into, like, when I lived in Texas, at every supermarket was Nolan Ryan's premium grade UDSA certified beef. Like, that's what it was. Like, everything was Nolan Ryan with his face on it. Older Nolan Ryan, too, by the way. Never went for, like, him in a baseball uniform looking young. It was always like
power move.
It was like current day Nolan Ryan. But all the beef you bought there was all Nolan Ryan beef. Can you imagine a world where every beef we buy just has Joe Thomas's mug on it? Because we're getting there.
I think we're getting there, and I think I can imagine that world. Now, that being said, it is time for the weekly update on the quarterback Deadpool. So we welcome in our commissioner, Jake Murren. Commissioner, welcome back.
Thanks, guys, and I welcome you into week 9 of the Afternoon Drive quarterback Deadpool. Just a quick update on teams here. Nick, your latest addition, Jade Mayava, had a 300-yard game with 2 touchdowns and 2 picks in a losing effort to Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
Garrett Nussmeier, decent game, but a loss to Vanderbilt for LSU. John Mateer got back in the win column last week, but Carson Beck, just a disastrous outing last week against Louisville where he had 4 picks.
Carson is Beck.
For Jonathan Peterlin, you have Cade Klubnik, who had a bye week. Arch Manning led Texas to an overtime win over Kentucky. You have Sam Levitt, who did return from injury, and with Arizona State upsetting, I believe, seventh-ranked Texas Tech last week. And Dante Moore, who just continues to impress. How are you feeling about your team there, JP?
Truthfully, I'm upset with Klubnik. And Arch Manning continues to be a massive disappointment. Yes, they got that win. Great. Congratulations. Happy for you, Texas. Did you watch the game?
Yeah, I think it was Manning, what, 13-10 overtime win?
Yeah, I think he played like 40% of his passes. The kid can't play. And you know what? Yes, it's my fault for drafting him, obviously. I'll pat the chest there. But like the collective college football world and the collective draft community needs to explain to me how they had their pants down when it came to Arch Manning in such a serious way. Like I need some better
you
explanation.
You have to explain why you had your pants down for Arch Manning?
I took him in the second round. It was a flyer pick. There was value.
Well,
pick.
But you're charging everybody else with okay, why were your pants down? Don't you have to kind of leave with yours?
Well, I think I did that in the first part of that in owning my drafting of him. Like that is the acceptance.
I mean,
acceptance
you said
of,
I drafted him, so I, that's my bad. But listen, why? Why just come to the hype?
It's not my livelihood. I'm not betting on the line here to go ahead and make sure that Arch Manning is perceived to be as great as he was.
It's quarterback Deadpool. People take
this
very seriously
to do this, and they've absolutely. I mean, Arch Manning looks unplayable.
So it's really interesting.
Bar none, he looks unplayable.
So it's really interesting about that, Jonathan. You have the top waiver wire now because Nick made a change to his team last week. So if you'd like to drop Arch Manning, you can do so right now.
Yeah, here's the problem with that is that we're in such a bad spot with all the good quarterbacks have been taken. I was off when I wanted to take Ty Simpson. I was off because I was gone because I had a child, and I blame this child. I love this child. Well, I kind of like this child. We're going to grow into the love portion with this child. Yeah. For Charlotte, it took me like 6 months before I really wrapped my arms around the child. And so, really, if anything, I mean, the child is to blame for why I'm not thriving in this quarterback.
You're not
Deadpool.
Even giving her name now on air. You're just saying the child.
Well, you guys make jokes about her name, so I don't want to do that.
No,
that's not fair to her.
No,
don't lump me in with Ned.
That's not fair to her.
Not jokes about it. And by the way, Elisa's family member made a way worse joke than we did.
Yeah, it's not fair what you guys do to my child's name. So the point is that no, I'm not going to do it for Brendan Sorsby. Like, no, I'm not. Okay. I'm going to ride the Arch Manning train for right now. But the man's unplayable. Unplayable.
Right. Well, that leads me to Mac's team. Mac, you have Lenora Sellers and South Carolina losing four of their last five games. So not great there. Fernando Mendoza, his stock could not be higher right now. Aiden Childs, who I think remains to be like the worst quarterback in this entire Deadpool. And then you do have Ty Simpson, who has strung together four straight wins over ranked opponents at Alabama. Also has an 18-1 touchdown to interception ratio. But Mac, the source tells me you're looking to make a change.
I am indeed. I will be dropping Aiden Childs. I was a year too early. So next year, quarterback Deadpool will be going to be looking for him. But
I've heard you have problems with prematurity, but that's okay.
Okay.
Happens to a lot of quarterback Deadpool players.
Back on the clownitude?
Oh, God. No. But I am going to be picking up Duke quarterback Darian Mensah this week for Aiden Childs.
Look at that.
Leads the ACC in passing yards and completions and touchdowns.
Right, so one of those stat queens, huh? The stat size queen, right?
I mean, clearly your team is the exact opposite of that, so that makes sense.
No, I believe that's JP's team you're talking about. Carson Beck's still going to be drafted. Who are my other quarterbacks? Garrett Nussmeier will still be drafted.
Oh, I'd still take my team over your team right now.
Okay.
I got Dante Moore.
Yeah, but you've got
to have the second quarterback off the board.
Yeah, he's not coming out this year, which is going to make this even funnier.
He is going to come out this year. He's going to be a top five pick.
Also,
he's going to come out this year.
Max got two quarterbacks, and
he's
acting.
Drew Aller, who's dead.
No, I don't have Drew Aller. He's gone.
Oh, you dropped him? Good, because he's dead.
Did that also happen when the child that you won't say his name
on him for?
Jaden Maiava.
Oh, that's right. The USC quarterback.
Yeah.
That's right. Okay.
It's a solid mid-round quarterback. Garrett Nussmeier is going to be a second-round pick at worst. Carson Beck will be probably a day two pick, but probably a third rounder.
Nussmeier is your great hope.
No. Who's my?
And he's the sixth best quarterback in the class.
Nussmeier. Agreed. Nussmeier. Yeah, but like you. Nussmeier, Beck. Mateer.
Beck is basically dead. Mateer's basically dead. Well, your team is cooked.
Beck is... No, it's not.
No, Pete Futak loves him some Carson Beck.
He likes some Carson Beck.
Yeah, Carson Beck with the 4 picks against Louisville. Really top-notch
quarterback
there.
Mr. Recency Bias.
Look at the big brain on Mac. He's going to be
dreaming. He can remember one stat. Well done, Mac.
Twice as many in one game than Mensah has the entire season. Okay.
Yeah, and he also plays at Duke.
Right, Carson Beck is PFF ranked 134 right now, currently, and quarterback number 12 on the board, according to PFF. And that's your great hope.
That's a tough one. That's a tough one.
That is a tough one.
When he's a top 100 pick.
Sam Levitt, who obviously I have on my team, is rated higher than any quarterback you have in the quarterback Deadpool. So, like, I don't know what we're talking about.
And just a reminder, too, we can make trades in this Deadpool. I know it's kind of tough with only four QB teams here, but there are options where you can package maybe two of your quarterbacks to get that one higher upside guy if you want to.
Anybody?
Just something
anybody
to think about.
I'm good.
Well, yeah, Mac's going to hang steady.
I think Nick
no
would
one
be
wants
the
any
one
part of Nick's team right now, and my team's like a hodgepodge.
I think JP's doing what I think it's transference or projecting, one of those two things, where your team's so crappy, you're just projecting that onto me, so you feel better about yourself. It's okay.
My team has been unfairly critiqued, because I go hard in the quarterback Deadpools on people like Arch Manning, and I do that, and that's fine. He deserves to have all sorts of critiques lobbed his way. But Dante Moore is the second best quarterback in this draft as of right now. And Sam Levitt's the fifth best. Yes, he is. And he's not going to be projected number two or number three or even in the top five overall and go back to Oregon. It's not going to happen. And then Levitt is the fifth best quarterback projected right now. So, like, if we're doing a points valuation system, we're golden, Pony Boy.
Commissioner, we appreciate you.
Thanks, guys.
Myles Garrett, the Browns defense, and chasing championship caliber in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hey friends, it's Ken Carmen
and Anthony Lima.
Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Your way and on your time.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.